Time is 10 o'clock. Coming up at 11 on Stage and Studio, join host Dime Roberts for a conversation and a live concert with members of the Christmas Revels and the Vagabond Opera. We'll hear tales and accordion music. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Jim Riswald will be Ava Lake's guest. They will talk about his latest show, Art for Oncologists. Now stay tuned for Flashpoints.
Today on Flashpoints, we'll have an update on Honduras, where grassroots activists claim the ruling party stole the recent presidential election there. Also, peace activists continue to get arrested, resisting the building of a massive military base in South Korea. And Miguel Gavilan Molina remembers the late Chicano poet and artist Jose Montoya. And we will feature some sound from a recent documentary on what's going on in Korea in terms of the resistance of that military base. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. We're now joined by Mark Weisbrot. He is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research there, based in Washington, D.C., and he's been watching what's been going on in Honduras. Mark, welcome back to Flashpoints. It's good to have you with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, last we left this subject was last week, and we were speaking on the ground to Adrian Pine, who was talking to us from a protest where people, grassroots activists, were gathering in the streets claiming that the election, the presidential election, has been stolen. Maybe you can sort of pick it up from there. Give us an update as best as you know what the situation is on the election front. And then we'll talk a little bit more about the significance if this ruling party sustains its own power.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's more evidence every day coming out. On Friday, the Libre Party, which was the party that formed during the resistance to the military, U.S.-backed military coup of 2009, released their count, which they were able to do because each party gets a copy of all the tally sheets, or at least all the ones that they can hold on to, from their observers at the election polling place. So they had over 14,000 of the 16,000, about 14,500 of the roughly 16,000 tally sheets, and they added them up, and they found quite large discrepancies, more than an 80,000 vote overcount for the ruling National Party, for example, over 82,000 votes, and then over 55,000 votes undercounted for the Libre Party. And so, and then there were others, a lot of other discrepancies as well. So that's quite large. I mean, that's about 4.6% of the total vote. That's enormous. And then you had, you know, all these other irregularities reported by observers. And I think the most important development in this regard was the observer from the European Union Electoral Observer Mission. And that was Leo Gabriel of Austria. And he did an interview in which he broke with the mission, which is a very, it's actually, I've never seen this before. It's a big breach of protocol. And he denounced the leadership of the mission for just accepting the results and going against the majority of the electoral observers they had on the ground, because he said the irregularities were quite, irregularities that they witnessed were quite enormous. And he gave examples of, you know, there was vote buying, there was the buying of credentials from the electoral workers. So in other words, you know, like I said, there was a a representative of each party was allowed to be at the polling place, but the National Party actually bought credentials from some of the smaller parties that were represented. And, of course, this makes it easier to steal the result. He said that the results, they couldn't find out when the results were being transmitted where the tallies were being sent. And according to the information that he got, that at least 20% of the original tally sheets were diverted. And so he was, very upset about this. And from his, and he said the majority of the observers on the mission also felt the same way.
Well, it's an amazing situation. Again, we see electronics and a different kind of voter system perpetrated, you have to say, by the U.S., into these elections, and it sort of makes it a lot easier. If you're going to steal an election, you don't have to kill everybody. But we're now seeing a real stark, profound difference between the oppositions, the grassroots party, and the ruling party. And we're seeing this right away, aren't we? I mean, these are folks, this ruling power, believes in police state ruling policies. They want the military in the street instead of the police.
Yes, and there were four Libre Party activists killed in the last 7 days, three of them during the weekend of the election. And so, from the beginning, there were a lot of doubts of whether this could be a free and fair election regardless of the vote counted. In the integrity of the vote counting procedure itself. And so now we're seeing the worst of it in the sense that there's no faith in the vote counting procedure too. Gabriel pointed out that in some places the EU observer missions are good and they do their job. And this is just an example where he said political, economic, commercial, and even partisan interests prevailed. And I think that's because the United States has such a big stake in Honduras and the rest of the world doesn't. It's a combination of those two things,
They were sanctifying this election before, while the votes were practically still coming in.
Yes. And, the U.S. government hesitated. I mean, there were other governments who moved even faster, like Colombia and Spain and Panama. There's always it's based on the model of Florida in 2000. You establish the facts on the ground. You get it so that everybody thinks the election is over and the results are in. And they did the same thing in Mexico in 2006. And so a lot depends on how the media treats it. Whether and how the observer missions treat it. I mean, that's one of Gabriel's complaints is, why didn't the EU observer mission look at these things? And are they going to look at them now? I mean, if the Libre Party puts these things up on the web, you're going to have something very powerful, some very powerful evidence that the election was actually stolen. And, this is where the battle takes place because the United States put $11 million into this election. We don't know where it all went, but they really wanted it to be perceived as legitimate, assuming their party won. And because they have military bases there and they're expanding them, and that's part of their whole strategy in Latin America since they've lost, most of the, South America is almost all independent governments now, and mostly left governments. And, even in Central America, they don't have anywhere near the kind of control they used to have. So this is their response to the political change part of their response to the political changes, that historic changes have been taking place in Latin America is militarization. So they really want to keep this base. And if they ever had, a progressive government in Honduras, there would be a lot of pressure from the electorate not to have these bases there. Nobody wants them. I mean, Ecuador elected a left government, and they immediately kicked out one of the few remaining bases they had in South America. And I imagine even when there's peace in Colombia, those bases won't last that long either. So they're going to hold on to this and do whatever they can. And the media in Honduras has not been great. I mean, it tends to go to lean, most of the media tends to lean towards the direction that the U.S. government leans.
Well, sort of a bit counterintuitive, I guess. And speaking of rush to recognize, you have Daniel Ortega there next door in Nicaragua. Was that a surprise to you?
Yeah, that surprised me, actually. I imagine he did that for, you know, kind of, I don't think he was part of the organized effort of the right-wing and pro-U.S. governments to do that. I don't think he did it as a favor to the U.S. I think he probably saw, he's, you know, probably has some relations with the current government as a neighboring country that he wants to improve or maintain, and did it for his own political reasons. But it was a surprise because, you know, almost all the other governments were the usual suspects that kind of do, you know, whatever the U.S. does in the region 90% of the time or more.
All right, Mark, before we let you go, we need to ask you to remind people exactly, you know, how bad it is now. This is referred to as the murder capital of the world now. Things really have changed since the coup. You have to say the U.S.-supported coup, however you want to put the language out. It's a very, very difficult and terrible and dangerous situation. As you say, activists, voting rights, educational rights activists, they're being killed off the streets.
Yeah, it's very dangerous. And, you know, the government kind of uses, too, the high homicide rate to pretend that these political killings aren't political. But, you know, you can tell. I mean, you know, even if it's the highest homicide rate in the world, which it may be right now, it still is, you know, maybe 1 out of 1,000 people, which is horrible. But it isn't. But when a political activist gets killed, it's extremely likely that it was not a robbery, and especially in the conditions that they're usually killed. So it has deteriorated both the whole situation in terms of violent crime, but also in terms of the political rights. Since the coup, and this was a result of this, you know, the destruction of democracy and putting in charge people who are mostly corrupt and are wanting to preserve their power against the will of most of the population, and of course with the active help from the U.S. government.
So these are hard times now for people on the ground who were hoping for better times, educational reform. It's going to go into sort of control and policing and police state tactics to impose, I guess, U.S. policies. That's where we're going again.
I think it is, yeah. It's reminiscent in some ways of the Central America of the 1980s, you know, where it was much more violent and the United States supported the killings of tens of thousands in order to control this area. And I think that that's what they're, you know, they've never lost Honduras and they intend not to. But I don't think they're going to win. I mean, you know, this was, the coup was a big setback. There's no doubt about it. And ever since then, of course, it's been much more difficult. And almost nobody recognized the last election in 4 years ago because it was the coup government that ran it. And because of the repression, only the United States and a handful of allies even recognized it. We'll see what happens with this one. I mean, it's still not over. You know, there's been thousands of people in the streets. As far as I can tell, nobody except Colombia from South America has recognized the election, which I think is quite significant. And, you know, it's going to be a struggle as to whether this government will be seen as legitimate. It's not over yet.
A lot of soldiers and a lot of people are in the streets, as you're saying, on a daily basis, and it'll be very interesting to see how the U.S. plays this as well. Mark, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this. This is one of those stories that sort of slips by, but it's really an important regional and hemispheric story, and I know you've been watching what's been going on in Honduras for some time. We've been speaking with Mark Weisbrod. He is the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and they're based in the Washington, D.C. area. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.